If you spend much time following political news these days, and a growing number of mental health professionals are cautioning against doing too much of that, you're exposed to a lot of headlines touting daily events as unprecedented and almost incomprehensible. You're then exposed to administration spokespersons and apologists spinning those same events as somehow perfectly in line with American history and values. To keep our news compass pointing north, it is essential that we regularly calibrate it with those in the know. And I'm very thankful to be able to call such a person right now in Greg LaBelle. Greg, as always, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Hi, welcome. Thanks to talk with you.
Out of all the chaos, what have been the events that stood out for you in the past couple of weeks as being particularly significant?
I think you have to look at this new round of turnover in the administration, and I would have to say near turnover in the administration, so that we can throw Jeff Sessions in there as well. I've got to use the word bizarre. I was going to use the word unheard of, but I think we could use that about every third sentence as we talk today. You know, with Priebus and Scaramucci and with Spicer, you know, there are rumors now that others are in danger of getting booted or moved around as well. The president is not happy with NSA Director McMaster. There are rumors that they're planning to give him another star, as they say, and send him to Afghanistan, move Pompeo or possibly John Bolton into NSA. And what this is about is about this president's proclivity to work in a state of chaos. And this is the latest iteration, I think, of that need of his to be constantly in a state of chaos.
So is the change going to show us significant progress, or is it basically just going to show us that there's continuation of floundering?
Well, let's talk about the chief of staff, because that's obviously the most significant one, I think, to date. We've got John Kelly. We've got another general in the White House now, and everybody's looking to him to sort of make the trains run on time over there. And as far as I can tell, it ain't going to happen, because as much as he forces everyone in the White House to go through him in communicating with the president, the problem is not primarily with the staff in this sense. The problem is with the president. He's continually going out and saying things that don't make sense, saying things that he hasn't talked with anybody about. So his staff is continually running around trying to sort of patch things up, find explanations for the things he's saying. So unless he can somehow get this president to change the way he functions, this is still not going to work. And I don't think we've seen any indication that this president has any interest in changing the way he functions. So I think it continues. I think it's more of the same.
Well, Greg, how much of this is just a wholesale contempt for the democratic process and for the post-war principles of liberal democracy, both in the United States and around the world?
Oh, on the part of the president,
yes.
A great deal of it. I have often said that it's difficult to respect a president who doesn't respect the presidency. And I think we're sort of saying the same thing here. I don't know if it's contempt or ignorance or such a focus on his own need for approval, approbation, that self-congratulatory nature that sort of comes out looking like contempt. I'm not sure, but it certainly looks and feels like contempt, and the result of these actions certainly leads one to see it that way. But this is not going to change about this guy.
Greg, how much importance do you place on the whole Russian sanctions issue? There's been a strong Russian response to the president finally signing the bill, and I think comprehensive news coverage has been sorely lacking on what all of this could actually lead to.
It's interesting. Apparently, the Kremlin has released a statement belittling President Trump for being played, I think is the term they use, outplayed by the Congress. It's obviously significant because I think it continues to muddy the waters in the relationship between the United States and Russia. What is it? What are the dynamics at play here? What are the parameters at play here? And it all you know, feeds into that much deeper, much more significant question about Russian involvement in our elections and so on, and our elections and the elections of other countries as well. Until we can sort of unravel that, this is just another sort of piece in this confusing ongoing soap opera that we're watching play out between these two leaders.
I'm appalled at the infiltration of the White House by the fringiest fringe of the political religious right. It really seems that that is the only group driving the administration's agenda right now, praying with him, studying the Bible with him, and then screwing the country. What's your take on that?
I'm with you, Welton. I mean, in some ways, I think it gets at what some of us have recognized, if I can be very blunt, as a sort of the rot at the core of this religious political movement that we have seen since its sort of beginnings or return, or however one wants to think of it, in the 1980s. There is this intertwining between religion and politics, which is choking both of them. And many of these leaders, maybe most of these folks, have really lost their credibility to speak as religious leaders in their desire to be perceived as powerful political players as well. There is this core of Trump supporters out there, and a lot of them seem to be some of these evangelical folks. And I don't know what that says. We need to really, I think, spend some time figuring out what that says about what that worldview is that leads these folks to support someone who is in so many ways the antithesis of what at least these folks claim to be their core values as Christians. I do honestly think that many of them are just drunk on power, the access that their positions have given them to show up at various White House events and to be on stages with the President of the United States and so on and so forth, has corrupted many of their views, attitudes, and their attachment to what I assume at some point were their core values. In terms of voters, I think what we see is a continuation of an attempt by political leaders to use religious issues, and I'm going to put those in quotes, as a means to keep a certain group of voters in this country sort of connected to them, attached to them, while in other ways, financial jobs, other kinds of things, the government is not doing the things that are in these people's best interest. Why do people continue to sort of buy into this falsehood? I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand. There's an alienation on the part of some people in this country, and maybe it does go back to those early days when the religious right began to sort of rise up, that there's such a deep level of distrust with government on their part that anything that smacks of not the government, and that's certainly what Donald Trump ran on, they're willing to look the other way on many, many occasions because of that overriding sort of apparent commitment to drain the swamp, as he likes to say.
Well, let's talk about the political opposition. I have to say the statements from Democrats on the Hill have not been at all inspiring. As long as Democrats say in sentences like, we think the better deal will appeal to middle-class families in both red and blue states, they really are not talking in the language of today's voters, not even a little bit. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah. When I heard about this better deal theme, I was thoroughly underwhelmed. For one thing, I'm just, it's a tactical matter. One doesn't, and this is part of Hillary Clinton's problem, I think, in her messaging and in the presidential race. Even her slogan, Stronger Together, actually pointed back to her opponent. And one of the things we know in politics, your message about yourself cannot be pointing back to the person you're running against. And I think a better deal has the same sort of ring to it. Better deal than what? Well, than this guy. That's not enough. It's not enough to tell voters why you're better than that guy. The question is, what are you going to do for them? How can they hang their hats on you? And so tactically, I think there's a problem with the way they're approaching it. And I agree with you on the larger issue, too. There's a reluctance on the part of leadership to take a stand. I've got to say, we've seen more courageous statements coming out of people like Jeff Flake, Senator Flake from Arizona, in his article in Politico last week, than we're seeing from many Democrats. It does seem poll-tested. Now, in their defense, electorally, they have a serious challenge. They have a number of Senate seats that are up next year, and many of them are up in the states where Donald Trump beat Secretary Clinton handily. So the question becomes, how do you put together a message that keeps your core supporters in place and at the same time appeals to independents? And in many of these states, like Montana and other places, they have to appeal to a certain percentage of disaffected Republicans. So it's a difficult message to put together, but I really don't think anybody is rising to the occasion and striking a chord that can actually connect to voters, and they've got to figure out how to do that.
Greg, I don't mind confessing, I'm desperate for a hopeful sign in the weeks ahead, and I want to know, what would you consider to be a hopeful sign? What are you hoping to see happen in the midst of all this chaos?
I guess at the legislative level, I would like to see the Democratic leadership in the House and the Senate become more proactive in some of the discussions that are going to be coming up. I think that that has to happen. In the case of the president, I think we are beginning to see or hear rumblings of Republicans in the House and Senate complaining about the president and how he's doing more damage than good in trying to get things done. That changes the dynamic tremendously, as these folks, many of whom got behind him holding their noses, we have to remember, last year. And so that begins to change the dynamic. I would love to see the new chief of staff be able to exert some control over the White House, because none of this is good for us as a country. When we look at the international scene, this chaos is not helping us take care of our interests and the interests of our allies around the world. So some ability to, I think, rein this guy in and get him to focus on a sort of a broader issue than his brand is critical. But as I said, I think for the Democrats, I think it's time to stand up and start showing some real serious courage and talking about these issues, how we need to approach these as a united country.
Greg LaBelle is the retired assistant professor of political management at George Washington University, where he ran the semester in Washington politics and Native American political leadership programs. Greg is also a veteran of several presidential campaigns. Greg, as always, your insights are invaluable, and I really appreciate you being with us once again on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks, Walton. I appreciate it, too. I look forward to talking with you again.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to someone you know, please share it with that person or persons. Direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and engage in the discussion. We're always grateful for our producer, Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.